click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Kaya Biz.
Tech and innovation.
Time to talk all things regarding technology and innovation, as it is just 7:30 here on Kaya Biz. Again, a conversation that you're more than welcome to participate in and share your thoughts on. And this one really helps us understand how South Africa really is part of a global community. And that also means while we're able to participate in the opportunities, we also need to be mindful of the threats and the concerns. When you participate in a transaction abroad, you would note that there's often a SWIFT code that is required. Yes, you'd install your account number, account name, the bank that you bank with, an institution that you're transferring funds to, but there's also a SWIFT code. What that essentially allows is for international banks and institutions to identify your bank according to the code that it has registered. And over the last few weeks and months, there's been a lot of political shifts and conversations around South Africa and potential sanctions and frustrations that have been raised when it comes to our international relationship with the US, but also how that in itself could actually influence global payment platforms and systems. To tell us more, we're joined now by Harry Scherzer. He's the CEO of Future Forex to help us contextualize this conversation. Harry, welcome to the show and thank you so much for your time, sir.
Great to be on this evening and thanks for having me.
Fantastic. I'm excited to speak to you. And I've tried to add some context before we deep dive into SWIFT sanctions threats, because it really is quite a big story, one that is layered and also very nuanced in terms of how it's interpreted. But perhaps take us back to the fundamentals of understanding why SWIFT is critical to global payment systems and how South Africa is a key participant within that arena.
Yeah, Gugu. So what happened was back in 1973, they built the SWIFT system, which has been used since then. And what it effectively is that it's a way for banks to communicate with one another, which helps individuals send money or businesses send money internationally. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it's used and that it's been used for so many years is because it's safe and secure. It's the most secure way of ensuring that banks talk to each other correctly and money doesn't get lost. And so that's why since 1973, we haven't updated our technology. We're using the same safe technology. It is cumbersome, it is expensive, but really safety is the ultimate goal. And that's why all countries are really almost forced to use SWIFT when doing an international payment.
I'm glad you mentioned that it is safe and it is secure, and most countries are actually forced to or actively encouraged to participate in it. There's also an interesting debate that I once saw as well unfolding online regarding SWIFT versus IBAN. And there were robust conversations, and those who were in the know were very technical about the differences and the nuance between the two. But help us understand at a quick overview as to why the two are different and why they matter.
Well, look, as South Africans, all we need to know is that we use the SWIFT system. So moving money out of South Africa, you can use an IBAN abroad, which is where it gets received. But in order to send the money, we use SWIFT. So right now, that is the rail that's used by South Africa. And so if as we know, there may be sanctions on certain South African members, if something like that were to happen, it would be a really, really bad thing for South Africa as a whole, because we are tied to the SWIFT system. That's just the way it is at present. Obviously, there's a lot of debate as to whether we should be, but the status quo is that we use SWIFT.
Got you. That's important, and it needs to be very clear, because that then ties us into the purpose of tonight's conversation in understanding how South African businesses then can navigate potential SWIFT sanctions. And maybe we need to unpack the context within which this was said regarding particular references to political figures or heads who might actually find themselves under sanctions by international organizations and international peers when it comes to international transactions and payments. That is something that we need to be mindful of.
Absolutely. Initially, I think what actually happened was that there was a rumor that spread that actually it wouldn't be political figures and heads that would be sanctioned. It would be the whole of South Africa. And I think the reason that rumor gained steam is because Enoch Godongwana, our finance minister, joined the Banking Association South Africa forum, which he never usually does. And so people thought, oh, this must be due to the U.S. Implementing this law and him wanting to chat to the banks about how to solve it. But then as the law sort of, or as the motion in America sort of unveiled itself, it became very clear that it wasn't aimed at South Africa as a whole, but rather certain political figures. And that made a lot of South African business owners breathe a sigh of relief, because before that, it was a terrifying thought that we would be sanctioned from the SWIFT system altogether. Luckily, that's not the case. But for those political figures who are potentially being sanctioned, if they're tied to any businesses, those businesses are still in trouble if this goes through.
So clarity on that, and I'm glad that you provided it. It's not all of us, but it's the particular individuals who might be identified by their businesses might be influenced. How and why would that happen in terms of them still having an influence on the businesses that interact with them? Would that compromise the integrity then of those institutions with the international community by way of being associated with this particular individual who might be sanctioned?
Yeah, so this is all being done by America. That's the first thing to mention. And SWIFT is actually housed in Belgium. So the question is, how can America make a decision which excludes us from SWIFT? And the answer is, America has the ability to stop us from making USD payments through SWIFT. And USD is the global currency. So if we were to be removed from using USD, it would be hugely significant. So what's happened is these Americans have basically said certain political figures have, in their view, been anti-America by supporting America's enemies. And so they don't want these people being allowed to use the SWIFT system and sending dollars. And what that would mean is any business that is in any way affiliated to any of the people on the list would also, by definition, not be allowed to send money. So that's just how America have positioned this motion. All that said, it still needs to pass in both the House and the Senate for this to actually go through, but it has been tabled.
This is challenging, Harry, because the last thing business and any bank and organization needs is uncertainty. So because, as we've witnessed this year, it's difficult to call what the outcome would be. What are some of the practical steps that businesses can take to protect themselves and ensure operational continuity should the risk and the threat of sanctions be real?
Yeah, Gugu. So the two answers to this question. The first is businesses that are directly affected because they are associated to these members. And for those businesses, they would be in a lot of trouble if this passed. And what I would suggest is trying very hard to base your payments in something outside of dollars or disassociate with the member on that list. That's what I would say for those businesses. But for 99%+ of businesses in South Africa that aren't directly affiliated to these members, I think there's also something to be said in terms of managing your risk. Because even if you are, let's say, an importer, but your costs are in dollars because you're importing from, let's say, America. Your costs are in dollars, but your sales price would be in rands. And so there's something to be said for mitigating your risk and making sure that should sanctions come in and should the rand weaken as a result of that, your costs are fixed. You've got your costs fixed. You've locked in a price irrespective. And so there is a way of using an instrument called forward exchange cover through the banks or through Future Forex, which is my company, whereby you can ensure that you lock into a price today for, let's say, 6 months or a year into the future, and you can act on that price as and when you choose to. So really, even if you aren't affiliated to these businesses, if you are someone that's exposed to rand strength and weakness, it's really, really a good idea to lock in your costs in rand terms by locking into an exchange rate today.
Got you. Almost sounds like a hedging strategy or futures, right? Futures contract, if I'm understanding correctly.
Exactly.
Got you. That's important.
That's spot on, Gugu.
Ah, I could be your intern, Harry. And I say this because it really is important for us to get back to understanding those fundamentals and basics, right? Because this definitely speaks to individuals who are entrepreneurs or do a lot of business with peers and colleagues on the international market. And I can imagine we live in a world where there's even cryptocurrency platforms that also allow for payment. And then, you know, changing that into a fiat currency comes with its own complications and costs and fees associated with it. But when it comes to payments and payment platforms, you know, much like you've mentioned with Future Forex, help us understand how you're navigating some of the new emerging trends and even these unforeseen potential risks like SWIFT sanctions.
Yeah, so for businesses that use us, Gugu, we're very, very keen on implementing forward exchange cover to manage their risk and hedge, as you've mentioned, against rand-dollar fluctuation. If a business knows that within the next 6 months it's going to get an invoice, we tend to encourage them to lock in the price today, because the last thing you need is to be loss-making because your cost inflated due to something completely out of your control. So that's one way of solving all of this. But on a completely separate note, we do believe that being so hyper-reliant on the SWIFT system, which, as we said, is cumbersome, it's old, it's sort of outdated technology, being so reliant on that and having America have such a big sway on it isn't something that really positions South Africa in a great light. And so for that reason, we do believe that the regulator needs to come to the party and look at blockchain technology as one of the ways of moving money. Right now, that's not possible. The government hasn't allowed for reporting on using blockchain rails as opposed to the SWIFT rails to send money out the country. But when that does happen, and when that does come to fruition, and the government does allow it, we will be first to market to ensure that we can help clients go in either direction, be it SWIFT, be it blockchain, depending on what's better for the use case of the business. And this is something that we're looking at, because particularly with so much pressure on South Africa at the moment, I think that the South African government needs to act sooner rather than later on making new payment rails a possibility.
And Harry, you're touching on something so pertinent here. I think I first heard about blockchain well over a decade ago. And at some point, it was actually understanding the differentiation between blockchain and cryptocurrencies, and more how blockchain, much like we send an email and in the next couple of seconds, it can be in your inbox. That's the same thing that can happen with payments on an international scale. We have seen several conversations around this being used as a payment structure and format. Why has it taken so long to actually, you know, add solutions and bring about practical solutions to the payments environment, specifically in South Africa, linking us with our peers abroad?
Yeah, so in general, Gugu, the reason it's taken a long time internationally is because it is a very good way to scam people if you are not an above board company or above board individual. Gotcha. You can easily scam people using crypto. And so for that reason, blockchain has been somewhat danced around as an option, because people care more about security than they do anything else, as they should. However, as we've seen recently in America, they've actually been embracing blockchain technology and saying, how can we ensure that it's safe and secure? Because there's no doubt it's quicker, as you said, it can be a couple of seconds. And there's no doubt that it's also cheaper. So it's quicker and cheaper. So if we can get the security right, it's simply better than the SWIFT system. And in South Africa, there's an extra complexity to manage. And this is why we've taken longer than America to get this right. And that is balance of payments reporting. In South Africa, we have exchange controls. We're very tight on money moving into and out of the country. And we have a reporting mechanism linked to the SWIFT system. And we'd have to replicate that on the blockchain side. We'd have to allow for reporting on blockchain. And the government is somewhat slow in allowing for businesses to report using blockchain. But at some point, it's going to happen. So that's why it's taking a little bit longer in South Africa. And we've seen in America, it's becoming much more prevalent using crypto to move money, or using blockchain rather to move money. But in South Africa, it'll come right as well. And we've positioned ourselves as being very happy to help the government with those reporting mechanics and assisting them in making that a possibility, so that we can play on the international field and not be hyper-reliant on the SWIFT system and, quite frankly, America.
100%. I'm so intrigued as well, Harry, just before I let you go, on your views and perspective on the changes that are coming to payments in South Africa. I'm well aware that the Prudential Authority, together with key aspects of the SARB, are working on evening out the playing field for banks and non-banking entities to ensure that we can facilitate payments right across the spectrum and between these various platforms, and keeping them both to the same level of regulation. So enhancing competition essentially in that market. I guess, firstly, your reflections on what this means locally, but also then the opportunity that this presents for our competitiveness in transacting and providing payments abroad and being part of the global community in that manner.
I think it's a fantastic change, and I think it's long overdue, and I'm very excited for it to come to fruition. Obviously, there's nothing quite yet that's gone live. But I'm very excited about this possibility, because what it would imply is that we no longer have to use the banks as sort of the oligopoly that they've been.
Yes.
To send money abroad. Suddenly you're going to have a situation where everyone can assist with this. Obviously, the offset is, can we do it in a secure way, in a way where we don't sort of lose money, or we don't have bad players in the market? But as long as they get that right and get the reporting structures right, I think it's a fantastic change and will make us more competitive on an international level.
100%. Harry, such a phenomenal conversation with you. Thank you so much for your time this evening, sir. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Gugu. Always great chatting to you.
Thank you. That's Harry Scherzer. He's the CEO of Future Forex, helping us unpack a very critical conversation tonight, essentially how we would have to navigate sanctions, the threat of SWIFT sanctions.
Kaya Biz.
Tech and innovation.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.